This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Don Gagne, in for Scott Simon. We're going to spend some time in Africa in this part of the program. Coming up, we'll have the latest on the murder case involving South African Olympian Oscar Pistorius. First, we go to Kenya. Kenyan authorities have been targeting Somali immigrants in one of Nairobi's most bustling commercial districts and sending them to refugee camps along the Somali border. The reason? They believe some Somali shop owners may be laundering money from extremists. But it's not easy to tell the difference between tainted money and honest cash, NPR's Greg Warner reports.
Depending on who you're talking to, the neighborhood in Nairobi known as Eastleigh is either a money laundering pit stop for global terrorism or one of the brightest nodes of African capitalism, a 24-hour shopping mecca attracting traders across the continent that is apparently the only place for hundreds of miles you can buy new jeans and sneakers at 2 in the morning. And part of the reason that Eastleigh invites such investment and such suspicion is because of the ethnic group that makes up its majority.
When you come to Eastleigh, it's like you are in Mogadishu or other parts of Somalia, okay? You don't feel an outsider. You feel that you are at home.
Mohamed Shakul was born in Mogadishu, and like millions of other Somalis, he fled the war in his country in the 90s. He ended up in Nashville, Tennessee, managing grocery stores. But 7 years ago, Shakul left the grocery store business, left Nashville, and moved to Nairobi. He launched a hotel he says blends Western hospitality and Somali culture. It's aimed at people like him who want to come here to invest the money they've saved up in immigrant jobs as taxi drivers and shopkeepers and airline stewards.
This is a place that you may most likely find your friend from Minnesota. Okay, you may find him next door room all of a sudden. And that happens a lot.
Shakul also manages another hotel, as well as two shopping malls, three housing complexes, and various stages of building four more. Which raises this question, how did he raise enough cash to go from running grocery stores in Tennessee to managing a minor Kenyan real estate empire? Well, here is what he did not do. He did not walk into a bank and fill out a loan application. Rather, he made a phone call. Actually, a couple phone calls. First, maybe to a second cousin in Dubai. Then a brother-in-law's uncle in London.
This money, mostly it came from Somalis in the diaspora and also in local here. And it's based on trust. I know you related to my mother's uncle or so on.
It's a system called Amana for raising money through tribal networks. And it's about as old as the Somalis themselves, who were nomads and had to move money from place to place. It's very informal. Shakul would call up these distant relatives and say, hey, I want to buy some property in Nairobi. Here's how it'll work and how much it'll cost. And do you want in? No courts, no contracts.
Not much legal paperwork, which unfortunately Somalis don't like taxation, the legalities, and all these things.
And all of these things are just the beginning of the problem for counterterrorism experts. Juan Zarate was, under George Bush, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Terrorist Financing and Financial Crimes.
These are systems that exist in parallel to the formal financial system, rely on trust. We've also seen evidence that those very networks have been used by groups like Al-Qaeda.
The Kenya government began to actively question the nature of this money. And part of the questioning was motivated by the American counterterrorism push in East Africa.
Parcello Kanta is the East Africa editor for Africa Report. He says what those questions uncovered was $2 billion being quietly piped into this little neighborhood of Eastleigh through Somali channels. To put this in context, this is in a year when the total GDP for the country was maybe $40
billion. In this way, the Kenya government is able to understand the size of Somali capital. And one of the reactions, and this is a natural reaction from any government, was absolute panic. It's like, how is it possible that there is this kind of money floating about and we don't know about it?
He says Kenya's reaction did not have to be one of fear. Imagine you're a developing country. You just discovered your economy is 5% bigger than you thought it was. But this was in 2009, when Somali pirates were claiming multi-million dollar ransoms. And in 2010, the radical Somali group Al-Shabaab declared jihad on Kenya with suicide attacks. So it wasn't too long before the Somali business people in Eastleigh began to be seen as a collective national security threat. Rukia Abdi Hadila used to sell kids' clothes from her kiosk in Eastleigh. Police confiscated her entire inventory, saying because she wasn't a Kenyan citizen, she didn't have the right to sell.
I was a good living person, and now that has been reduced. I feel helpless and hopeless.
But Rukia's problems started in earnest this December when the Kenyan government announced that all refugees in Nairobi, that's at least 50,000 people, would be rounded up and driven to camps or deported. Even the refugees that were legally running shops, paying taxes, employing Kenyans. In fact, 3 days before I met Rukia, two policemen actually showed up at her house one evening.
And they asked me, open. I was fearing. I was a single mother. I didn't know what to do and what they can do to me. Then I decided, I prepared my documents and I opened. Then they asked me, identify yourself.
So she showed the police her ID, which is a piece of paper signed by the UN saying she's a legal refugee with the right to be in Kenya. But the police told her no. She had to show them Kenyan citizenship, or they were taking her to the police station.
I said, if you take me there, then who will I leave my children with? Let's all together move with my children if you'll take me in, because I don't have a Kenyan ID. And then they said, we're not interested in your children. Bring money, which I told them I don't have. And then they said, if you don't have money and if you don't have an ID card, then we need you as a woman.
That's when Rukia screamed, and a neighbor scared off the cops, who probably knew what they were doing was illegal. Not just the request for the bribe or the threat of rape, but even Rukia's supposed crime. A Kenyan court has temporarily blocked the government's plan to relocate refugees, saying that violates a half century of international law. But here's the thing. Ever since the government simply announced its intention to relocate people, that is, ever since Eastleigh began to be seen by officials less as an economic boon and more as a terrorist den, Kenyan police have been accused of arbitrary mass arrests and terrible abuses and extortion. And as you can imagine, this 24/7 shopping mecca is now a lot more quiet. Rents are down. Thousands have fled. Mohammed Shakul says his hotel used to have a waiting list. Now it's half empty.
So it has affected negatively, substantially, the businesses in Eastleigh.
Now, Shakul is nothing if not an optimist. He thinks Somalis will once again feel at home in Kenya, maybe when tensions ease after the presidential elections next month. But he says if it's time for him to pack his bags, well, Somalis are nomads.
It's a nomadic business culture. Wherever the money is, we'll go with it. You know, we'll follow the honey just like the bee.
Following the honey, in this case, may lead him back to the place he was born. Mogadishu is experiencing its first real security in two decades, and the real estate market there is booming. He might just have to make a few phone calls. Gregory Warner, NPR News, Nairobi.